Okay, welcome to the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee for Monday, March 18th. And just provide you with a little bit of update about the agenda today. We are going to start with our work session so we can get that out of the way. And the committee is going to adjourn at 4:45 because the chair has to be in her district to meet with the governor at 6 p.m. So we're going to be efficient. We have a stopwatch. After the first panel goes, we're going to limit testimony to 3 minutes. So we're going to ask you, if you have written testimony, hand it in. Please do not read it. You can summarize it. We are capable of reading, but it is helpful for us to hear the key points that you'd like to get across. I know some people would debate that, but that is a statement that is not debatable at this time. It is helpful if you can turn off your cell phones, please. And just remember, the mics are very sensitive, so just you need to not sit right next to the mics, but be a few inches back. Otherwise, your testimony comes out a bit garbled. With that, we're going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 602. And we are in work session, so I'll accept a motion.
Chair Dingfelder, I move to adopt the Dash 10 amendments to Senate Bill 602.
Okay. Senator Olson moves to adopt the Dash 10 amendments to Senate Bill 602. Beth, do you want to just provide a quick overview on the Dash 10s?
Madam Chair and committee members, for the record, there's a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. No statement was issued on the Dash 10. Replaces the measure and provides that prohibits a person from using a motor to propel boat or use seaplane to land on or take off from Waldo Lake. It clarifies that the act does not apply to boats propelled by electric motors operating at a speed less than 10 miles per hour. There's an emergency effective upon passage.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion on the table to adopt the Dash 10 amendments. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Just for the record, I have a book, Atlas Lakes. I purchased in 1985, and I would like to read this for the record. The chemistry and biology of the water in Waldo Lake are exceptional, and the clearly classify the lake as ultra oligotrophic. It is the most oligotrophic lake in the state and, as noted by Carter et al. 1966, among the purest lakes in the world. It's the reason why I supported the Dash 10.
Thank you, and thank you for reading that into the record. Any other comments? Senator Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, on public lands and public places, generally am not in favor of denying public access to it. I think Dash 10 is a compromise that I can live with, that the elderly and the handicapped will still be able to, or disabled will still be able to have propulsion on the lake to get from one side to another. It's a huge lake. The electric motors would provide that. It also provides sailboats with the ability to move in and out of the dock or on ramps. So the fact that we only had 4 seaplanes land last year, I would be supportive of this Dash 10.
Thank you, Senator. Any other comments, discussion? Okay. Any objections? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Take another motion.
Chair Dingfelder, I move that Senate Bill 602 be reported out of committee with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Okay, Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 602 as amended with the Dash 10s to be reported out of the committee with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Hansen?
Aye.
Senator Hatch?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Dingfelder?
Aye. With that, the motion carries, and I'm going to assign Senator Przanski, the chief sponsor of the bill, as the carrier. So with that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 602, and we will move on to our public hearing for the day. And I'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 488. Beth?
Madam Chair and committee members, Senate Bill 488 repeals the sunset and provisions related to the carbon tax.
Okay, thank you. And just a reminder that we have just about an hour and 45 minutes, but again, if you have written testimony, you can hand it to Jennifer, and please summarize your comments. We do have a panel that's going to provide introductory comments. We have Senator Beyer, who is chairing a committee, and he would like to be on the panel. So our staff's going to go run and get him. But in the meantime, we have Dick Peterson from the Department of Environmental Quality, Margie Hoffman from the Governor's Office, and Jack Fawcett Associates. So who's going to start off? And then once Senator Beyer gets here, we'll have him go.
Gotcha.
Right. Who drew the shortest straw?
Looks like. Chair Dingfelder.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the
committee. Do you need a mediator up here to figure out who's going to go first? All right.
This program so much. Yeah. Members of the committee, my name is Margie Hoffman. I'm the governor's energy policy advisor, and I just want to thank you for the time for allowing us to come and testify in support of Senate Bill 488. And I am happy to pause if Senator Beyer.
Senator Beyer, why don't you come up and join us? And once Margie does an intro, we have a fourth chair there. It's fine. I'll sit there. As soon as you finish your intro, then we'll have Senator Beyer testify so he can go back to chair his committee. I'm sure he's left it in good hands, but he's probably nervous. So.
Those are good Republican hands.
Yeah, no. Thank you, Senator, for being here. And Margie was just starting an introduction, but why don't we let you go ahead and then we'll resume.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senators, for the record, Lee Beyer, State Senator from District 6 in Central Linn and Lane Counties. I'm here today to speak in support of the Clean Fuels Bill, Senate Bill 488. And I think what you're going to hear is some arguments against this today. The arguments are probably based on economics, politics, and the fact that we don't need this because of federal regulation. I will start out and say that I'm supportive of this measure. It may have some small flaws or difficulties in it, but overall, this is a bill that points us in the right direction. It's not lost on me from my many years of service on the PUC that it's pretty clear the world is being affected by climate change as a result of carbon and other photo problems. And the issues with that, when you look at it, there are two major causes of that. One's the generation of electricity, and the other one is vehicle fuels. Vehicle fuels being the biggest source of carbon. I think that this points us in the right direction, and it's important not for necessarily solving the problem today. It's important because the solution to these problems are probably in technology that's coming along, and we need the target out there. We need some assurance for the entrepreneurs and other industry that public policy is we're going to address the problem. And this is a way of giving that assurance that gets us on the right track to get there. And the benefits coming from this long term are great. Certainly, we have the potential to significantly cut carbon pollution. That will be to the benefit of our children and grandchildren for years to come, perhaps saving the planet. Secondly, economics. It's clear that there are fuels out there, and I'm thinking currently probably of natural gas in various forms, that will significantly, if you can solve the chicken and egg problem, the chicken and egg problem being we don't have the infrastructure out there nor the encouragement to the investment to make the change to use more of that for vehicles. But if we do, if we get it out there, you're running today natural gas prices on a per gallon basis are about 40% of the cost of gasoline. 40%. Think what that would mean to industry if that was a common and easy to do today. It's not. I want to acknowledge today it's very tough to do that, particularly for long-haul trucks. But that's there. The other one is, frankly, a national security problem. I mean, we pay one heck of a lot of money for petroleum that goes into the pockets of people and individuals who are killing our young men and women in foreign lands. We can turn that around in a short period of time if we choose to. It just makes darn good business sense to do that. I think we can get there. There are some issues with the program that you're going to hear a lot about, whether it's technically feasible or not. I think that it is. I think it probably aren't there today, but I think setting it out there farther in the future, that goal will get us there. If you look at the program that's working in California now, you're going to hear a lot of discussion about how that's not working. Well, the reality is that it's been in place a short time, and so far there is no negative impact on that. There's no negative impact. The studies that have been done project an impact in the years ahead, all things being equal. But I suspect that that's the assumption that nothing will change. If something changes, you're going to get a positive result out of that. Makes good sense. It just makes common sense to head down this road. It's the right thing to do, and we should stay the course we're on and take the sunset off. With that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer questions or turn it back to the experts.
Thank you.
Can we ask questions now of the senator?
Yes, so Senator, we'll ask questions now so you can run back to your committee. Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Senator, for your testimony. My question is that basically all this bill is to do is to repeal the sunset. What's wrong with keeping those rules intact so that we can study this issue rather than just arbitrarily, without reports, arbitrarily saying let's go to the future with this and move forward, as you said?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I understand where you're coming from on that. And I think the fact of taking the sunset off and letting the program die in 2015 without reenactment doesn't provide the security for those who are looking to make significant investments in alternative fuels and that kind of infrastructure. And sort of actually, if someone said, if you built a new facility and there's nobody there to encourage, if there's nothing there to encourage you to do it, would you make that investment? And the answer to that is probably no.
Follow up. Would that encouragement be along the line of tax credits?
Doesn't have to. The encouragement that's in the bill is not tax credits. It's not an expenditure of public money. It's a requirement that people will have to use it. That's what's there. It's saying we're committing as public policy to say those who are using these fuels or alternatives have to do it down the road.
One follow-up. Thank you. Senator, thank you very much. I appreciate your time on this. It's obviously important to you. The concern that I have is that we've had technologies in our state before that we've banned, which would have led us down the road a long time ago to oil-free independence. And we banned those technologies because we thought they were bad. If we open this up for use and make mandatory use of it, could we not run into the same problem, that we're going to have a technology that's going to hurt us since it's not a proven technology?
There's always the, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. Senator, I think there's always the fear that something the policy you'll adopt may hate you in the future. We've got experience with that. But I don't believe we're looking at that here. I think we're looking at technologies that are out there. I mean, frankly, if you look at it in the short term, a conversion to natural gas in the short term basically has no downside risk to it in the short term. The answer, I think, a lot of discussion will go around is cellulosic fuels. Frankly, our state has been a leader in some of that. Oregon State University has been one of the leaders and developed a lot of the technology. We're not there yet, although there are a couple of plants around in Senator Hansel's district that's one that's has great possibility, ZCAM, I think it's called. If we hit that, sort of the holy grail of that, they'll have major improvements, both in Oregon's economy. Frankly, we spend a lot of money out on buying fuels that go out of state. If we could have the opportunity, if this comes along, we have the opportunity of keeping that money in state and recycling it in Oregon. There's a real potential opportunity there. It's not there yet, but there's the potential that we could get there. And in terms of state policy, both just environmental as well as economic, it makes a heck of a lot of sense to do that.
All right. Senator Bates, did you have a question?
Just a real quick
yes.
one. Thank you, Senator Byers. Legislative oversight's important for this kind of program, but I also agree with you that eliminating the sunset allows people to make that big investment in infrastructure. What do you think is appropriate for oversight from the legislature? Reports back to us on a regular basis? Would you be comfortable with that? These programs can go off the rails once in a while. We saw the Betsy do that. But, how can we keep track of this but get rid of the sunset at the same time?
Madam Chair, Senator, I've been around here long enough to say that I think sunsets are fiction. The reality is every time this body chooses to convene, sunsets can be removed or put in place. We have the authority to stop anything, anytime, and I suspect that we will. If we found as we do with all policy, if we find something such as Senator Olson was talking about that was really devastating to the process, the legislature would stop it in a minute. We can do that. And it's our responsibility to do that. On the other hand, you know, you can at least provide the, if at the minimum, the illusion of longevity by taking a sunset off.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Senator Beyer before we let him go back to his chairing his committee? Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you very much, and I apologize. I need to go back and do the business on the other chamber here.
Right. Thank you. We appreciate you taking time out of your committee.
Well, somebody should do the business over there for us. Would you go over and...
All right, Margie, sorry to cut you off there.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Margie Hoffman. I'm Governor John Kitzhaber's Energy Policy Advisor, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 488 today, which would remove the sunset for Oregon's Clean Fuels Program. Energy is the single issue of our time, both globally and here in Oregon, and no single issue will have a greater impact on our state's economy, environment, and quality of life over the coming decade. The central question is always whether we're going to shape our energy future or we will be shaped by our energy future. According to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, Oregonians spend approximately $14 billion a year on energy. Most of that money leaves the state of Oregon. 2011, Governor Kitzhaber convened a 10-year energy plan task force to look at a lot of different subsectors within the energy sector and asked those people to come up with recommendations about how we could put together a practical approach to meet our future energy needs. The plan is intended to position Oregon to be more competitive and resilient, both economically and environmentally, again in the coming decade. It focuses on three core areas. One is maximizing energy efficiency and conservation. The second is enhancing a clean energy infrastructure by removing finance and regulatory barriers. And the third is accelerating the market transition to a more efficient, cleaner transportation system. Lifting the sunset on the Clean Fuels Program is a critically important step to help accelerate market transition to a more efficient transportation system. The Clean Fuels Program very simply sets the standard, and then the market can determine what is the most cost-effective way to meet that standard. Alternative fuels include propane, natural gas, several different kinds of natural gas, electricity, and biofuels, many of which are typically, as you heard Senator Beyer testify to, many of which are less expensive than traditional gasoline or diesel on the market today. As we move from the current system that we have today to a more diversified fuel supply, we absolutely need to make sure that we protect the price at the pump. This cuts both ways. We need to make sure when Oregon started blending in biofuels, those biofuels are actually less expensive than traditional gasoline and diesel. Currently, gas prices are on the rise, and this has nothing to do with anything here in Oregon. It has to do with the infrastructure of the gas supply chain. The Clean Fuels Program has a very strong consumer protection mechanism that will ensure that as we take measurable, practical, achievable steps to move forward to diversify our fuel supply, we can protect the price of traditional gasoline at the pump. It also ensures that the program can spur the diversification of the fuel supply so that consumers across the board have access to lower cost, lower carbon fuel alternatives, saving consumers money over the course of the long term. There's a question on the table about why now? Why today? Why not wait for tomorrow? Why move forward with lifting the sunset? First, the cost of gasoline has been rising and will continue to rise. Currently, there's a monopoly on the fuel sector that subjects Oregon consumers to the fluctuation of a global commodity. The Clean Fuel Standard creates the regulatory certainty that we will diversify the fuel sector in Oregon and offer lower cost, lower carbon alternatives to public and private fleets, not to mention end users. This will help stabilize and potentially reduce the cost of the transportation system over the long term. In addition, the Clean Fuels Program is already serving as an important economic driver in Oregon, no pun intended. Several biofuels producers have located here and are putting Oregonians to work every day. So not only will the Clean Fuels Program offer lower costs and lower carbon fuel choices, but we can stop relying on jobs in other states to meet some of our energy needs, and we can start fueling Oregon cars with Oregon fuel today. Continue to do that. So I want to say thank you very much again for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
We're going to hear from the rest of the panelists, and then we'll see if there's any questions.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, Dick Peterson, Director of Department of Environmental Quality. I'm here to provide information and support for Senate Bill 488 to lift the sunset on the Clean Fuels Program. The 2009 Oregon Legislature enacted House Bill 2186, which authorized the Environmental Quality Commission to adopt a low-carbon fuel standard for transportation fuels. The bill specified certain features, such as regulatory flexibility and consumer protection, to be included in the program. The goal of the Clean Fuels Program is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from transportation fuels by 10% over a 10-year period. This is important because transportation accounts for about a third of Oregon's greenhouse gas emissions. Oregon's renewable fuels standard has already provided infrastructure for fuel blending and already allows for the use of non-blended fuels. The Clean Fuels Program builds on the renewable fuel standard by providing Oregonians with the cleanest biofuels and access to a wider range of cleaner, low-cost fuels such as electricity, natural gas, propane, and biogas. The program also supports job growth by creating demand for the construction of refineries and infrastructure to produce and deliver these important fuels. House Bill 2186 included a strong consumer protection element by mandating that the Clean Fuels Program not cause fuel prices to increase. The Oregon Legislature directed DEQ to routinely monitor fuel prices and defer or eliminate requirements if needed to prevent price increases. DEQ focused on the consumer price protection as a critical element in our discussion with stakeholders about how best to develop the program. Gasoline and diesel prices will increase or decrease over time for a wide variety of reasons. But in Oregon, it won't, and it can't because of the Clean Fuels Program. In fact, many clean fuels such as electricity, natural gas, propane are less expensive today than the gasoline and diesel they replace. Another important consumer protection mandated by the law that the Clean Fuels Program may not create a fuel shortage. The Oregon Legislature directed DEQ to routinely monitor the supply of low-carbon fuels and defer or eliminate the requirements if needed to prevent an anticipated shortage. These consumer protection measures are unique to Oregon and ensure that our program will deliver benefits without raising prices. As I committed to you in 2009 when you were considering House Bill 2186, DEQ conducted extensive stakeholder participation in developing the program, including an additional year of outreach that was above and beyond our usual rulemaking process. This has been one of the most robust and involved efforts DEQ has undertaken. Even though the EQC only adopted the first phase of the program, DEQ and its advisory committee have worked out the details needed to implement the next phase so we are ready if a decision is made to go forward. So how would phase two work? The EQC would adopt the standards for gasoline and diesel for each of the 10 years of the program. In the early years, fuel suppliers would have to do very little beyond current practices to meet those standards. During each year, fuel producers and importers would keep track of the amount of gasoline, diesel, and lower carbon fuels they provide to Oregon. Each type of fuel would be tracked separately because each fuel emits a unique amount of carbon over its life cycle. Once a year, fuel producers and importers would report to DEQ about how they meet the standard. DEQ reviewed the reports and determined that they are in compliance with those standards. If they are not meeting the standards, companies would look at how to make up the shortfall or they could carry over any surplus they have to following years. Also, keep in mind that fuel for exempt uses such as farming, military, marine, race cars, airplanes, log trucks, and railroads would be excluded from this calculation. Now I want to shift and address Senate Bill 488 and why removing the sunset is necessary. One of the key issues for this session is lifting the sunset on the Clean Fuels Program. When the legislature adopted House Bill 2186, it included a sunset of December 31st of 2015. The primary purpose of the sunset was to ensure that the legislature could check in on our details, such as how those consumer protection measures were implemented. Of course, this made perfect sense at the time because the details of the program had not been developed. However, as I just described, the details of the program have been worked out, and now is the time to remove the sunset. DEQ is convinced that the existence of the sunset is a significant barrier to new investment in the infrastructure needed to support the Clean Fuels Program. You'll hear from others today why the program is important to them. The key here is that every year that the sunset is in place delays the ability of the 10% reductions by yet another year. Lifting the sunset does not automatically start phase two. Our Environmental Quality Commission would have to adopt rules, which would be done through a rich public rulemaking process that includes consumer protection, economic analysis, and the use of data collected in phase one. Senator Beyer brought this up, but I do commit to continued close and communication and coordination with the legislature as we move forward. Delay in lifting the sunset risks delaying critical infrastructure development needed to support the program over the long term. So in summary, the economic analysis commissioned by DEQ showed that the Clean Fuels Program will benefit Oregon's economy. A similar program is already in place in California, and fuel suppliers there have met the standards. Because of the consumer price protections required by statute, Oregon's program will not and cannot help cause a fuel price increase or fuel supply problems. It is critical that you lift the sunset so that the program can be successful in creating the jobs and economic activity anticipated by diversifying our fuel supply. That's the end of my comments, Chair Dingfelder.
Great, so. Thank you. Jack, you go ahead and then we'll take some questions.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Dingfelder, Vice Chairman Olson, members of the committee. I do have copies of my testimony today, and I will leave them after I finish, and I will just summarize what I have provided for you. My name is Michael Lawrence, and I am the president of Jack Fawcett Associates, an economics and public policy consulting firm with 50 years of experience in energy, environmental, transportation issues. I appreciate the chance to talk on about the Clean Fuels Program, and it's an honor to speak before the committee today. JFA led a study of economic impacts of the program, which was commissioned by the Department of Environmental Quality. We worked with the advisory committee and the DEQ staff and brought to the research our experience working on and studying a wide range of energy issues. We have done work for industry groups, the U.S. Department of Energy, state and federal departments of transportation, and nonprofit organizations. We have been working on public policy issues here in Oregon for over two decades. We sought to take an even-handed and careful approach to the analysis, as we have done with many clients in many different public policy issues. Our analysis of the economic impacts of the legislation relied on methods and data used frequently all across the United States on studies, similar studies of these policies for transportation and energy. We actually did not one, but eight different analyses of how the Clean Fuels Program might affect the Oregon economy. We did so because the program is, by definition, a market-oriented approach which allows producers and suppliers of automotive fuels to select the most cost-effective path to compliance. Our study found that the Clean Fuels Program has the potential to drive economic development. By driving investment in new infrastructure within the state of Oregon, the rule is projected to create growth in a range of sectors across the state's economy. These sectors include construction, which benefits from new capital investment within the state. Also, because households spend less on fuel, more household consumption is directed to wholesale and retail trade, healthcare, real estate, banking, just to name a few. Many of these sectors, especially construction, healthcare, and retail trade, are actually very labor-intensive and create more jobs than sending our Oregon dollars out of the state to purchase petroleum. The potential gains to the economy are significant. By the end of the 10-year period of the Act, the Clean Fuels Program has the potential to create nearly 30,000 additional years of employment across many sectors of the economy. It has the potential to produce up to $1.6 billion in savings at the pump and over $2 billion in gross national product. Importantly, our analysis found no sector in which job losses were encountered. Other studies are being used to argue a contrary view, that the clean fuel programs would, in fact, have a very negative effect on the Oregon economy. These studies limit their focus to biofuels, rely on worst-case scenario assumptions about what fuels will be available, and sometimes assume draconian and unrealistic government actions to force compliance. These studies don't actually address programs like the Clean Fuel Program. They address biofuel mandates. Mandates such as a required volume of fuel in the market by a given year are much more narrow and restrictive than the Clean Fuel Program, which is a flexible standard that allows the market to pick its own path to compliance. To the extent that any one fuel stock demonstrates supply limitations or too high a price at the pump, manufacturers and consumers have the flexibility to rely on a wide range of other alternatives. The competing studies are not specific to either Oregon's economy or to this law. I'd like to specifically address concerns about the price of fuel at the pump. At the time we did this study, the U.S. Department of Energy projections indicated that the future ethanol and biodiesel prices were expected to be effectively equivalent to the price of gasoline and diesel on a per energy unit basis. Updated versions of the same projections for 2013, using the latest research and experience in biofuel production and technology, now expect the price of biofuels will actually be between 20% and 30% lower than the petroleum price of petroleum at the pump. If, however, prices of alternative fuels were to become onerously high, higher than the prices of conventional fuels, the Oregon law already has built-in off-ramps that allow for relief of the law's requirements. In combination with a wide variety of options for compliance, these consumer protection provisions of the Clean Fuels Program effectively insulate against the significant cost burden for the fuel-buying public. Second, let me address concerns about the limited supplies of particular fuels. On a national scale, EPA has set a target of 36 billion gallons of biofuel in the Federal Renewable Fuel Standard. This level is expected to be realized through technological advances in biofuel production. However, even if the technological advances are slower than anticipated, there is not a reason to find insufficient fuel supplies in Oregon. This is because Oregon represents only approximately 1% of the nation's market for auto fuels. So while biofuel supply challenges on a national program are possible, there is no reason to believe that these problems would occur in Oregon. That said, we did consider supply limitations in our analysis. We assume limited supplies of biofuels and particularly limited supplies of advanced feedstocks in our scenarios. We also developed some alternative scenarios with very low reliance on biofuels and greater reliance on abundant supplies of natural gas and electricity. These alternative scenarios, in fact, produce the most beneficial projections of the impact, positive impact on the Oregon economy. So to summarize our report, let me just hit a few high points. Our study is the only study that is specific to the Oregon Clean Fuels Program. The positive economic benefits vary depending on how the market responds to the program, but in no scenario did we find negative economic impacts in any sector of the economy. The program drives economic development because it encourages investment and long-term employment in the state. The wide range of fuel options allows producers and consumers to reject expensive and unavailable fuels while still meeting the program's goals. Projections are that price at the pump will be roughly the same as petroleum is, or possibly lower. And finally, the biofuel supply limitations are less of a concern at the state level than at a national level in a national program. And electricity and natural gas supplies are plentiful. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, and I'm sorry I called you by the wrong name, so.
That's okay.
Appreciate that.
Not the first person to do that.
Questions, I was reading your firm's name. Questions for these panelists. Senator Hess.
Thank you, I have a few. I guess this is to the state, I'm not sure, but there have been criticisms that you know about reporting and monitoring so far, and I was just wondering if you could address those.
Mm-hmm. Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hass, the first phase of the program is a reporting program, and when we're setting up the program, it's at the highest level of fuel producers that produce fuels for Oregon. And so the reporting is pretty straightforward. I think it's similar to what's going on in California. So it's a fairly straightforward reporting. And there'll probably be about 70 producers of fuel that will end up reporting to this program.
Follow up. I agreed with a lot of what Senator Beyer had to say about this, but the one place I disagreed with him strongly is that sunsets are fictional, that we don't really need them. Nobody on the Revenue Tax Credits Committee sees it that way, because those sunsets are ticking, and when they go off, everybody that's a beneficiary of those tax credits or those constituencies lose their program. And so I see those as putting some responsibility on DEQ or whoever to make sure they comply and pack the hearing rooms and say, look, this is working and we're doing our job. And so I was just wondering what the thinking would be or what the downside might be if the sunset, instead of removing it, were set back 5-10 years.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hass, Margie Hoffman with Governor Kitzhaber. Thank you for your question. I think when the 2009 legislature passed the Clean Fuels Program and allowed DEQ to move forward, DEQ only moved forward with the reporting component of the program because of the five-year sunset. And the reason for that is that created that sunset being at 5 years created regulatory uncertainty, and we didn't want to have people invest in meeting a clean fuels standard not knowing if the legislature was going to act to remove the sunset or to not. In my mind, it's incredibly important that we protect the price of gasoline at the pump, that we protect consumers and move forward in a measurable, practical, achievable way, which the price safety valves, that's the function of the price safety valves. If you stick a sunset on the program, it creates regulatory certainty for that time frame, but it doesn't set a strong market signal that the program will live for the life of the program. So as Senator Beyer, you know, that's really up to the legislature.
Okay. Other questions?
To tie in with Senator, Chair, and anybody can answer this, tie in a little bit with what Senator Haas has said on the sunset, and that would be that I wasn't here in 2009. I don't know a lot of the history, but I do know that I've been told that we have mirrored California's program to some degree. And it's also my understanding that that program has been declared unconstitutional, at least parts of it or all of it. I'm not sure just exactly what, but it went to court, was declared unconstitutional. It's now before the Ninth Circuit. It'll probably go to the Supreme Court. Our neighbors to the north, Washington State, have decided not to proceed at all until there's some clarity in the judicial system. And so, you know, it just, I'm having a hard time on that issue alone as to why we should proceed when the program at one state and another, on both neighbors, and our neighbors to the north aren't even, you know, they're going to wait and see. So I, having made that, am I off base? And if so, where? And please respond.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, I'll take a stab at this. Very good question. Certainly, I want to point out one difference between what we're doing in Oregon or proposing to do in Oregon and California's having the consumer price or consumer protection parts of it. So that's just different. That doesn't address the lawsuit issue that you're talking about. Time-wise. So if we move forward and adopt phase two, our rulemaking would probably complete by the end of this calendar year. Folks would end up reporting in to DEQ in terms of reporting their carbon intensity of their fuels starting in the following year. And at the same time, if we're adopting rule, our rule has to go to EPA for their approval to incorporate into our, you know, air quality management things. So compliance with, if we move forward today, compliance with the Clean Fuels Program likely wouldn't begin until 2016. I would suspect that the litigation issues in California will be sorted out at that time. If there's a decision made there between now and then, certainly we would want to and be able to address that even as we're moving forward with the program.
Do either of you have any comments on the Washington, on what the status is with Washington with the new governor?
Chair Dingfelder, what I've heard, and I'm just talking with folks, is that direction from the governor is to move forward with a broad energy plan, including a low-carbon fuel standard. But I don't have specifics on that in terms of their timing of the current administration.
Do you have any other?
Chair Dingfelder, I'd be happy to call up there. I know it's something the governor has been talking about moving forward, but I'm not sure if they yet have a specific timeline in which they're going to do so. The last thing I would say is that we participate in the Pacific Coast Collaborative, which is British Columbia, Washington, Oregon, and California. We have a couple of subcommittees that work on different issue areas around energy and in particular building resiliency into the decisions that we're making as the West Coast states. On the Transportation Subcommittee, the Clean Fuels Program is identified as a priority for the jurisdiction. So I would also note that.
Okay. So if you can follow up, because I've heard anecdotally that that is the case, that Senator Inslee or Governor Inslee is interested in moving forward where his predecessor had sort of put the program on hold. But if you can get back to us, that would be helpful.
Chairman, if I might add to that, with regard to the sunset question from the Senator, there is a very important distinction between Oregon, California, and Washington, and that is that Oregon does not have a petroleum production industry. So what happens economically when the state decides to use fuels other than petroleum, and particularly when it has opportunities to produce those fuels within its state, to refine them and then deliver those to the marketplace, is to create economic activity where there is none. And a very important part of that is for the marketplace to have the confidence that that is, in fact, an area that they can invest in, to build new plants and equipment to provide these fuels to the marketplace. The sunset is one of those uncertainties that you have the power to remove. And by removing that uncertainty, you give the marketplace a little better position on the belief that they can make these investments and they will be safe from regulatory certainty, as my colleague said just a minute ago. So I think that's probably the most important part of the sunset in my view.
Okay, thank you. Senator Olson,
questions? Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. EQC was supposed to adopt rules and report back. Have they done that?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, the rules that were adopted in December of this past 2012 put forth the what we call phase one of this, which is just purely the reporting aspect of it. So they have completed and done that rulemaking, so that is on the books. So what we're doing now at DEQ is, in terms of implementing that phase one, is communicating with and working with fuel suppliers to help them understand what the reports would be. They have to register by June of this year and then start working on the reporting aspect that will start in earnest in 2014.
Follow up.
How many manufacturers, to anyone, how many manufacturers now or in the future have said they would like to move to Oregon to develop their product?
Chair Dingfelder, I don't have an answer to that. But
I was going to say, we actually have some people signed up that are manufacturers.
Then let me do another follow-up then.
Sure. You can, yes, you get a pass on that one, so you get one
thank
freebie.
You very much. These fuels that we're talking about, kind of building the plants here to augment our fuel system, are these fuels an addition to gasoline, like ethanol is added to gasoline? Is that how it will be used, or will they burn strictly in a car, regular car engine that the consumer doesn't have to convert?
And that's a very important point, Senator, Madam Chairman, Senator. The fuels we're talking about producing in Oregon can be ethanol, ethanol from traditional feedstocks or non-traditional feedstocks, can be natural gas production, or it could be electric power, all of which in some degree can allow manufacturers, deliverers of fuel to meet the requirements of the law. So that these are fuels that are currently in use in the marketplace. The vehicles that are sold in the marketplace currently use these fuels, and no changes would be required in the technology in order to use them.
So they're not an additive to gasoline. You would just put the ethanol cellulosic ethanol into the car and burn it without any change to your system whatsoever?
Madam Chair and Senator, we currently in Oregon have about a 10% ethanol in our gasoline.
Right.
And that is primarily corn ethanol. And if these new technologies move forward, we would have opportunities to use ethanol which is not corn-based, which would be cellulosic ethanol, which gives us additional benefits on the carbon reduction with the same product being used in fuel.
I follow up. I guess you don't understand my question. We will still be burning gasoline, but we'll be adding this to it.
Absolutely.
We're still, this whole definition of our petroleum will be reduced. We'll be adding our own ethanol instead of buying ethanol from Tunisia, Brazil, California, wherever it's going to come in here. But we're still going to be using gas-operated vehicles.
That's correct. We may be using electric-powered vehicles or natural gas vehicles as
and
well.
If we switch, it's going to cost. If we switch to natural gas, it's going to cost consumers the conversion to get a car that operates on natural gas.
They would have to have a car that operates on natural gas, and they would enjoy a 50% reduction in their fuel costs.
Senator Bates, did you still have a question?
Yeah, two or three real quick ones, if I could. Yep. Mr. Peterson, I kind of listened to the regulations about, reporting sounds kind of complex. What about small small suppliers of fuel? Do they have to do the same? I mean, in our area, I used to buy my, I'll ask you the question about diesel in a minute. I used to buy my diesel from, it was all organic or whatever you call it.
Biodiesel.
Yeah. And they're not a big operation down there. But do they have to report that kind of stuff too? I mean, I guess something may make it kind of complex and difficult for small for smaller outfits to do. Is that the case?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Bates, the biofuels industry would have to report to us, and our plan is to certainly make it as easy for them in terms of reporting their carbon intensity of their fuels. And from that perspective, it's fairly standard reporting language. One of the things, and I'd have to go back and double check as it relates to biofuels, but the bill does rules do protect small gasoline stations that are importing fuels that import less than 250,000 gallons per year at their station. They need to register, but they wouldn't be required to report or comply. But I'll have to get back to you on the smaller biofuels facilities.
So anything less than 250,000 gallons is exempt from reporting?
At less than 250,000 gallons of gas per year, they're exempt from reporting and compliance. They just have to register that.
Okay. Did you follow up?
Yeah, follow up on diesel fuel. You didn't mention diesel fuel in conversation here. I used to run and still run one car on pure biodiesel, and actually it ran better, got better mileage, and smelled a lot better, too. Once in a while I get lucky, it smelled like potato chips. But, you know, so that didn't require anything for my automobile. It was an old one to change over. So I would, but the price was about the same as diesel, and as diesel price went up, it seemed to go up, too, and I never could quite figure out. Is there some mechanism that requires that to happen?
There's no mechanism that requires that to happen, either that I'm aware of on a regulatory side or on an economic side. What happens, though, is when you have a dominant product in the marketplace and another product is a substitute for that, that smaller substitute market product will tend to follow the price of the dominant product in the marketplace. So, in fact, both gasoline and diesel historically have driven the market, and the price of the fuels, if there are substitutes, have tended to be related to that price. For example, the U.S. Department of Energy in its forecast of ethanol prices has historically tied ethanol to gasoline prices, and only in the last several years have they begun to decouple the two, because ethanol is becoming a larger product with a larger base and therefore has its a more cost-based price in the marketplace.
Senator, maybe we should ask the petroleum industry when they come up here why their gas prices go up the way they do.
I think my guess is when the price one went up, they just match it and make more money. One last question.
Sure.
If we do become efficient and effective in producing alternative fuels in Oregon, how do we know it's not going to be shipped to California?
Well, depending on how large, Madam Chair and Senator, depending on how large the demand in Oregon is, it'll be consumed in Oregon first because the transportation cost for the fuel is very high. So the most efficient place to consume it is close to where it's produced. Now, if their capacity is greater or if the demand is not that high in Oregon, then certainly they will seek other markets to sell it, and California, obviously, an obvious one, or Washington if they go forward with their law or others. But I suspect that in both those states we're going to see investments of a substantial nature in non-petroleum fuel production. And they will be providing their own state's product, and they will also maybe be shipping it to Oregon as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Hansel, you have another question.
Yes, and Mr. Lawrence, in your testimony said that would by removing the sunset, you would create economic certainty. My question would be, is in your opinion, does the court case in California create the possibility of economic uncertainty?
Madam Chair and Senator, it certainly does. And, you know, in the regulatory process, we always have the courts involved to evaluate and determine whether or not the law is passed by legislatures and the administrative departments do, in fact, meet the requirements of the Constitution. So that process has been true with every environmental act that I've ever been involved with. So that's a process that's going forward, and it's not surprising that these challenges have occurred. In that particular case, there's two sides to it. There's one side that says that the expectation is that it will be upheld, and it If it's not, there may be some minor modifications to the law which will allow it to be upheld. So it is certainly a deterrent to moving forward with major investments to meet this demand for fuel in the future. But I think we're just going to have to wait to see how that shakes out.
Then why remove the sunset? Because you don't create economic certainty then.
Well, if you remove the sunset, you create more economic certainty. It's sort of like telling the industry that we want you to invest in Oregon. We want you to make these investments to create jobs and opportunities within Oregon because we're going to consume these fuels in the future. But we're going to reconsider it in 5 years when their investment horizon might be 20, 30, or 40 years. So they have to have some certainty that their investments that they're going to make are going back to be to supply a market that will exist in the future. The sunset says that even the legislature is uncertain about whether or not the program makes sense because they're not willing to give it the full stamp of approval. If you give it your full stamp of approval, then that uncertainty will go away. There's still the court uncertainty to deal with.
And, Senator, we have some folks from the industry that are going to come up, so perhaps we can ask them as
Madam
well.
Madam Chair, I have a question for Mr. Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir, for answering these. You talk about regulatory certainty. Why don't you just let the free market take over and let somebody come in and build the plant and show that it works and show how good it is and let them make the investment rather than have the state dictate that this investment can be made and we're going to protect their investment?
Madam Chair and Senator, that's a very good question. It's an excellent question. What's happening here with this clean fuels program is we're saying to the petroleum industry, we don't want to consume the product that you're offering us because it doesn't meet other goals that we may have. There's no incentive for the petroleum industry, absent the legislation, to provide this different fuel, which is a low-carbon fuel. By requiring that they provide this low-carbon fuel, on average across the state, you give them the incentive to do that, and you give others the incentive to make the investments, and those would be here in Oregon, to provide the fuel that's required. This, in fact, makes the market in essence freer than it is today. The market for transportation fuels is 100% or nearly 100% petroleum product. By encouraging alternative fuels, Oregon is taking a little more control of that marketplace and providing more competition in the marketplace. So the market would be moving forward and taking care of it.
I have a thousand other questions, but we probably need to move
Great.
Ahead.
Thank you. I'm sure we all do. I do have one quick question, because the chair does get to ask a question every now and then. Small businesses. I have many small businesses in my district. And how would this affect small businesses in Oregon?
Chair Dingfelder, I don't think it will. Other than possibly providing small businesses with the opportunity for cleaner fuels to work their fleets or whatever the case may be.
No. Did you have any other?
I mean, the follow-on, yeah. Madam Chair, is similar to what was just stated, and that is that the price of fuel, depending on what the response is to the petroleum industry, will be less than it is today because some of these alternatives are less expensive. You know, we've all seen the 100 mile per gallon electric vehicles that are on the road today. We know that natural gas is twice as efficient as petroleum in an internal combustion engine. These are great savings available to households and to small businesses throughout the state of Oregon.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I would ask, is there anybody testifying as to the effect on the current internal combustion engines and what it'll, because ethanol is terrible on a lot of things, and I just wondered if anybody is
we do have somebody from the trucking industry
if they can testify
up.
As to what it's going to do to the lawnmower and to the outboard motor and those things that haven't been tested, because that's going to cost the consumer a fortune to convert.
Do you have any comments
if
quickly?
I could respond,
yes.
Chair Dingfelder, quickly. All those are exempt, and other fuels, gasoline pure fuels will be available. I mean, it's not we're not mandating the exclusive use of biofuels and all fuels, by the Clean Fuels Program. So I don't see, counting the exemptions that we have, and there still will be a need for gasoline.
A follow-up on that. What do you mean by exemptions? In my lawnmower, I can burn regular gasoline without ethanol, which is very limited. Right now,
there are exemptions in the rule. There's a number of them. There's aircraft, racing vehicles, military vehicles, locomotives, ocean-going vessels, farm vehicles, tractors,
outboard motors,
logging trucks,
lawnmowers.
Yeah. Well, that, I don't know if that falls under farm vehicles or not, but we'll.
big ones are. So what we'll do to make sure everybody has a copy of the rules, we'll send those to our staff and make sure I've read through them, but certainly not everybody sits around reading the rules. So we'll make sure that everybody gets a copy to read through. Thank you very much. Very informative.
Thank you.
I'm just going to make an announcement because obviously this is a very important discussion and we're not going to cut off the line of questioning. So we're doing the math, obviously, we have not enough time in this hearing. We have 27 people signed up to testify. I'm going to ask if we can limit it to 2 minutes, and then if we need more time on Wednesday, we have a pretty light agenda on Wednesday. So we will hold over the public hearing, especially for many of the folks who are signed up here are regulars in the building, and so we'll try to prioritize folks who aren't in Salem or in the Capitol on a regular basis, but I just want to make that announcement so folks know if we need to go over on Wednesday, we will be doing that. So I'll start calling up some of the folks that we have written up. General Caldwell, we have. Thank you, General, for being here. And then we have a couple of companies like to testify, Pacific Ethanol and Pacific Power Stock. And why don't you come on up, and you've heard some of the questions up here.
Okay.
We will ask you again if you have written testimony handed in. You can have the key points, and we'll ask you to limit it to 2 minutes. And appreciate your patience, and thank you, General.
I can hardly wipe my nose in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. Ms. Hoffman asked me to come in and give you a perspective from the military side of the equation. Whether you know it or not, over 15,000 Oregonians have been deployed to the Middle East in the last 9 years. Those 15,000 folks, that is America's energy policy, quite frankly, because without that, without the security of the oil that creates coming from the Middle East, we have a very unstable economy. I would bet you that if you included all the costs of the military to keep oil flowing to the United States, gas would probably be $10 or $15 a gallon, and somebody's probably figured that out. The military and DOD is moving briskly toward biofuels and to other alternative fuels simply because of the cost and the national security issues related to it. And I had quite a bit of, but one of the facts that I'd like you to remember, in Oregon, we put $6 billion a year we ship out of Oregon for fuel. In the United States military, if you get a $10 increase in fuel, in oil prices, it creates a $1.3 billion shortfall in the budget. Just to scant 2 years ago, it was something on the order of $5, $6 billion that they had to come up. And when they do that, they go inside the budget and start taking money out of the budget in order to do that. As far as innovation goes, the military has been a great innovator, as you probably well know. But Intel really started because we needed a microchip for a missile. And that's what started that. And that was an investment by the military that fed those companies that started the Silicon Valley. Also, the Internet was part of the military investment that panned out, didn't work for the military, but now it's used by everybody else. But again, that was a military investment. So now we are in a situation where we in the Oregon National Guard, our budgets are primarily federal, as you well know, but we are moving briskly toward alternative energies. And those alternative energies include 47 charging stations that we're going to put in our armories in this next year and try and move to electric cars for our recruiters and other folks so we can get off of fuel prices. And I'll conclude with that, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, General. Appreciate it. Appreciate you being here today. Why don't we hear from everybody, and then we'll take questions.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here. Senator Hansel, privilege. For the record, my name is Steve Van Maurik, and I'm with Pacific Ag. We're based in Hermiston. We have been in business for 15 years, and we harvest the feedstocks that are candidates for production of biofuels. Today, that means wheat straw, corn stalks, grass straw, and the like. 200,000 tons a year now go into cattle markets and export markets and domestically. If that were a biofuel, that'd be about 14 million gallons of ethanol as a kind of a comparison. I've been in the business of harvesting and exporting grass straw from Oregon to Japan and Korea for over 20 years. And I remember when we were at the threshold of deciding what to do about no burning and the burdens and the impracticalities that were of great concern. And now today we see $150 million a year coming back into rural Oregon because of grass straw going to export markets. So here we are again, and I want to, we've been working in the biofuel space for feedstock the last 3 years in Iowa and Kansas. We've been working with DuPont and a couple of other large energy companies in Kansas and Iowa operating demonstration harvests. That is all now moving to a commercial scale. There's $1 billion being invested in Kansas and in Iowa. We're the leading feedstock provider there, harvesting the corn stalks and the wheat straw. We're one of John Deere's largest accounts for tractors. We're the largest baler in the country. And we have our partners and customers in Iowa and Kansas who absolutely know where Hermiston is. We're headed for over 150 employees. We are a homegrown operation out of Hermiston, and we're turning into a national headquarters there in District 29 for the feedstock expertise to fuel, to provide the fuel for biofuels. I appreciate your support of keeping the sunset off with 488, and thank you for your time.
Great, thank you.
Chair Dinkfelder and committee, Tom Curler with Pacific Ethanol. We have an ethanol plant in Boardman as well, also in California. And so very supportive of the bill to lift the sunset. Just really don't know why one would want to kill this program before it even begins. It's got huge upside potential for the consumer and for the state of Oregon in terms of economic development and investment. We, as I said, we have a plant in Oregon. We also have two in California. We're making additional investments in California because of the low carbon fuel standard there. It's working. And one advantage of the Oregon program is we're 4 years behind California. So if anything goes wrong in California, we'll know it and we'll be able to adjust. Want to specifically answer your question, Senator, about the lawsuit there. We're making those investments in spite of the lawsuit because it's very clear to us that the lawsuit, A, is political, and B, is technical in nature. The whole thing is not going to get thrown out. We've been talking to the lawyers and the regulators in California, and regardless of what happens with the legal outcome, there are ways to structure the program to go on. So what is really a hindrance to our investment is the sunset in Oregon, which is why we're not making the additional investments now in Oregon, but we are in California. So we would really support this bill.
Thank you, gentlemen. Before you jump up, we'll see if there's questions, but I am going to follow up on Senator Hansel's question. For the private sector folks here, what is the time frame that you need in order to look at investments for your operations? I mean, do you typically work in 10, 20, 30? I mean, for your business plans, what's the time frame that makes sense for you? We've had some questions here about pushing back the sunset, but it's helpful for us to hear when you're making those investments, the time period that you're looking at.
I would say 15 years at a minimum.
We follow the facilities, and so we're a 2 to 3 year scale up to get to scale on what a facility like that would need to provide its feedstock. Mm-hmm. And then we would like to see something like a 10-year time frame.
All right, Senator Olson and Senator Bates, you have questions?
Yeah,
or
I do.
You did. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, General. I've heard that number many times that we export $6 billion in fuel costs. Is that the straight wholesale price to the dealers in Seattle that sell it to us?
Madam Chairman, Senator Olson, I really don't know the answer to that. I will tell you that I do know that we export $1 billion a day in the United States to countries that aren't that friendly to us. So we have to have some means of protecting that flow. Where that $6 billion, I would suggest it goes probably many different places.
I've heard that many times. Follow-up. Gentlemen,
We talk about regulatory certainty, so we need to get rid of the sunset. You know, the sunset, and I kind of agree with Senator Hass that the sunset is for us to be able to look at what's going on and have people come back to us and tell us whether it's good or not. But you got to understand, in Salem, there is no regulatory certainty. We can change tomorrow. We can change next year. We can change the year after, depending on the makeup of this committee. So regulatory certainty doesn't really concern me that much. It's market certainty. If you've got a market commodity that competes, what's the problem? Why does the state have to be involved to allow you to compete in the market? Anybody?
Certainly there's political risk to the market. We're well aware of that. What the current sunset does is it takes that risk totally away and says there will be no market. In terms of this program, it's a performance-based program. We're not the only fuel that can qualify. It really allows the market to function. Right now, one could argue from an economic perspective, and I think the gentleman, the economic man over there, the first panel, did, that we don't really have a well-functioning economic market with lots of alternatives. This program opens up the market to allow us to compete.
Follow up?
Yeah.
Just one question. Yeah. You said you have one plant in Oregon and two in California. Now the one in Oregon is profitable? And you're working on
some good days, yes.
You're working under the same assumption we have now, that there's a sunset involved. If we extended the sunset, would that benefit you and give you certainty?
What I said was is that we are making additional investments to produce even lower carbon fuels in California. So we're putting money and jobs and dollars into California. We'd like to do that here in Oregon as well.
Senator Hansel.
Steve, you didn't mention in your verbal comments, but you certainly did previously to me, and then also in your written comments. But we're actually exporting some of your product to the Middle East, right?
Yes, sir.
So the fuels or the feedstock is going to the Middle East.
Yeah, a container at a time. We're trying to balance the trade.
There you go. Thank you. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, our newest market is UAE, of all things.
It'll be an uphill climb.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Bates.
I want to ask, thank you, Madam Chair. I want to ask that question about the sunset a little different, kind of turn it around a little bit.
You guys thought you were going to get off that easy.
To produce the kind of product you want to produce, I assume it takes a lot of capital investment, and it takes time to recapture that capital investment afterwards. As I understand this bill, or now regulations, it gives you certainty that you have a market to market it into. And without it, when we look at it the other way around, this bill wasn't in place, you just have to be directly competing with the normal producers of petroleum. And they can manipulate that market, as we know they do sometimes, especially with some futures trading. So my sense of this thing is that if you know you have a market that's there for you, you can compete inside that market, but without it, Would you make those large capital investments if you didn't have a market waiting for you?
No.
No.
That's the importance of this bill, as far as I'm concerned.
One other thing that's really interesting is being in Kansas, we're harvesting around oil and gas wells, and both are embraced in that combination economy right there. And it's
you're talking about fracking wells.
I don't know what if they're fracking them, but they're. That's an historical oil and gas area, and now we're scratching the earth to get the biofuels off too.
Senator Hansel, did you have a follow up, Senator Bates?
But to follow up,
make sure he's clear on that. You did say without this you wouldn't make that capital investment.
That's correct.
Let me make a follow up to Senator Bates. But do you not qualify under the federal program, and did not you make investments under that program?
Yes, so we're talking about making additional investments to what we have already done. And frankly, it was the Oregon Renewable Fuel Standard that was very instrumental in us building our plant here. If we want to make additional investments to create lower carbon fuels, we absolutely need the Clean Fuels Program. Now, and you raise a good point about the national federal program, because it is highly, first of all, it's not as great policy because it's not a performance standard. Secondly, the advanced fuel, which is the the fuel that we're talking about, investing or not investing, in what we're investing in California, portion of it is absolutely under attack and is not solid. It's not something any investor is investing in right now. It started off right here, then EPA took it down here. So in terms of investment certainty, it absolutely is not working.
Madam Chair, this advanced fuel you just mentioned, is this a substitute to gasoline? I'm trying to get to this point. Or is this an additive to gasoline? You're going to replace ethanol with your product.
There's a variety of different advanced fuels. Ethanol absolutely can be one of it, which would be blended into gasoline. There's other advanced fuels that look more like a hydrocarbon. And so I'm not sure
The question is, do I not pull into the gas station and get 10 gallons of unleaded, but I pull into the gas station and I get 10 gallons of your fuel straight away?
No. You're blended. My assumption is that it's going to be blended into.
You're a blend. So we're still going to have, but we're going to use less of it, but we already have ethanol. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And
I appreciate that.
There's electricity and natural gas. And
so I think, just to clarify, ethanol is now required partially under the renewable fuel standard, which this committee passed several sessions ago.
Yes.
This would expand the range. That was
exactly
specific to ethanol and biofuels. This is to create a market, to create incentives, if I'm getting this right, and innovation for different types of fuels. It could use different feedstocks than what we're currently
as
using.
As well as lower carbon
Lower
ethanol.
Carbon footprint than.
Yeah.
And it's not just ethanol or biodiesel. It could
yeah.
be natural gas.
Yeah.
I think we're going to hear for some other potential suppliers as well.
Yes.
So,
well,
and
much,
a question
much?
For the military. How much are we spending now, the state of Oregon, specifically through the military for petroleum? Do you have that number, or is that something you can provide us?
Madam Chairman, I can provide it. I don't have it off the top of my head, but it's our energy costs are the single biggest cost that we have.
For the state of Oregon?
Yeah, for all military operations. So, but our budget is
97%. For the state of Oregon's military.
But our budget is 97% federal, 3% state. So, but it's all our money because we all pay taxes. So I'll get that number for you, but it's a pretty good number considering the jets and the tanks.
Chair, I have a question. I'm still concerned on the ethanol. Your ethanol is going to be better than the ethanol we already have.
From a lower carbon standpoint, if yes, that would be that's one of the reasons, the rationales of the program.
Your production process produces ethanol that has a less carbon, smaller carbon footprint than the existing
Correct.
Ethanol, the corn ethanol base we have now.
Yeah, I mean, we're just to be clear, today in Oregon, we are corn, and we're fully integrated to the local economy, and we're the largest feed producer as well as fuel producer, and we're a very low carbon fuel. This program and investments that we would make then would use potentially other materials to make a lower carbon fuel, which is what the program incents.
And this technology exists right now to potentially make lower carbon
fuel? Yes, it does. We're,
okay.
we're doing it in California. I mean, we're making those investments in California.
And just to be clear, you're importing much of the corn into the state currently?
Yes, we also work with local growers. And to follow up on that, just to be clear, even if we didn't exist, all this corn would be imported into California, into Oregon. So all we're doing is taking the starch out, concentrating the protein and the oil and the fiber and giving it back in a better product.
Okay.
So we're value adding the corn that's already coming into the state is another way of saying it.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your testimony today, and thank you for coming all the way from Hermiston. Appreciate that. And it may be worthwhile for ethanol for you to follow up with make sure and get clear questions or answers to Senator Olson's questions. Okay, we're going to hear from the other side on this issue. We have Bob Russell, John Ledger, and Brian Dougherty. I'm going to ask the three of you to come up together. We're going to try to alternate. I will ask in just a few minutes if there's anybody who cannot come back on Wednesday, we'll make sure and have you come up. I know we have some people from the Port of Morrow, and we certainly don't want to ask anybody to come from far away.
We don't like
We got a lot of choices here. kind of.
Did you want to go to another committee?
I don't know. I was thinking we have someone from Ontario.
Oh, we do. Okay, why don't you have him come up then?
Up there, yeah.
Yep.
I don't
Either.
I'll wait for.
Okay, so.
I mean, there was one going.
You know, we'll call them up next. So you gentlemen can go first.
Your 3 minutes are running.
Yeah, it's okay. We got enough. We have a half an hour more, but we will make sure and hear you so you don't have to come back and burn more, you know, fuel to come over here. So.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations, and I'm here in opposition to Senate Bill 488. In 2009, as you've heard, the legislature passed House Bill 2186, which is the bill that originally authorized the Low Carbon Fuel Standard or Clean Fuels Program. And when that bill came from the House to the Senate made some significant changes to it. And one of those changes was to insert the sunset. At the time that those amendments were adopted by the Senate, the indication was we're going to put a sunset in here so that the legislature can maintain complete oversight over this program. And as a person representing a major fuel user, we took a significant comfort in that. Since that time, DEQ spent 13 months with an advisory committee, which I sat on, developing the program. Then they developed the rules, and as you've heard, there's two phases, phase one and phase two. In December, the Environmental Quality Commission adopted the phase one rules. They did not adopt the phase two rules. The version that I saw that was circulated that in the fall was incomplete. It did not have the rules that would show how you would buy and sell credits if you couldn't meet the carbon standards. Nor did it have rules that would demonstrate how you would actually calculate the carbon intensity of the fuels. So from our perspective at this time, we do not know what this program looks like. And as an industry that is incredibly dependent on our fuel supply, we would ask that you continue to maintain your oversight, leave the sunset in place, and let DEQ come back with completed rules so we know what the program is, and then we can have the discussion on the merits.
That concludes. Thank you. Thank you for your brevity also, and we have your testimony. Okay. All right, gentlemen, clock's ticking, so somebody needs to go.
Okay. Thank you. I'm John Ledger, Vice President, Associated Oregon Industries. As you know, and you heard a little bit about, this actually goes well beyond the ethanol issue. It goes into a trading mechanism, essentially buying and selling credits. And we think before you jump into this, holding hands with California, which I understand is the only other state to be looking at doing this right now or having done it, we think that needs a lot more scrutiny. There was a lot of discussion while the rules were being done, for instance, on the off-ramp. And that would be if the costs go up a certain amount, what's the mechanism for bailing out of this program if it turns out to go sour? And when we look at those rules, it's something that would probably take, I'd say, 18 months to 2 years to do, because it requires a 12-month running average. Then it requires an analysis. Then it takes having to go to the EQC, all of which can be contested. We think before something like this goes into place, it really needs scrutiny. And that was the whole point of having that sunset date. So you could take a look at it. Maybe California will go down the path and you'll have some idea of what it will look like. At least the guinea pig will be to the south of us, which might be good. The last thing I want to mention is people think maybe there's not a lot going on. At the federal level, we're looking at mileage standards for cars that by the 2025 model year are going to cut emissions in half from cars. It's going to cut it by about a third for trucks. And this is nationwide, which frankly, emission reductions will swamp this. So in a lot of sense, things have kind of just events have overtaken this bill. And we're looking at something in the future that I think is going to do a lot more. Last, not passing this bill doesn't commit you to anything. It keeps you where you are. You can still lift the sunset if the agency comes in and says, here's how it's going to work in detail. Here's are the off-ramps. You can lift it next session. You can lift it the 2015 session. You don't give anything up, but you save a lot of certainty. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Dinkfelder, members of the committee, Brian Doherty testifying on behalf of Western States Petroleum Association. I will be brief. I wanted to address a few things I heard before I go into more formal testimony, and I'll keep that brief as well. Senator Bates mentioned about needing a market. The market is what was just said by John Ledger. The federal government has a market that says we have to blend as much cellulosic as there is available. It's the federal renewable fuel standard. You also have a market that John talked about in terms of lowering the greenhouse gas emission with another federal program that is this miles per gallon or tailpipe emission standard that's going to bring something like 25% to 50% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions from that through the same period, the 10 years that you're talking about in this program. Let me go to another point. We talk about $6 billion going out of Oregon. Last time I paid for my gas, I paid an Oregonian for this. We do not own, our companies do not own any service stations in Oregon. These are thousands of jobs that are in Oregon's economy that are here, and not all of it. In fact, the U.S. has now gone over 50% of its fuel now is coming from either North America or Alaska or here. It's gone back over 50%. The next issue, the history of the Oregon LCFS. We are 4 years into a six-year program, and DEQ withdrew the Phase 2 implementation. It wasn't that we waited and had a strategic plan here to put the reporting first. DEQ put both reporting and implementation in July this year, and DEQ withdrew the implementation in November. This is a troubled program. It was supposed to go in 2011, and it was delayed at that time, too. We have a program that is infeasible, costly, unconstitutional, and is duplicative of the federal government. That is the problems it has with it. We have infeasibility. Midwest corn ethanol, you heard about California and how California is going fine on their program. They are, because they can use Midwest corn ethanol, and all they want is the corn
ethanol.
That
is the hook. Do you have written?
I'm just on a roll.
I know. I could tell. Do you have written testimony?
I will wrap up.
Yeah.
Midwest corn ethanol has not been eliminated in California. It will be eliminated in 2015, and it will eliminate in year two of our program. It's over 80% of our material. Lastly, I just finished. We've heard about unconstitutional. I've told you about the federal, and it's not necessary. I think it's important for us to look at the fact that we will be blending what ZCAM has, what Sequential has. They've invested without having to have a low-carbon fuel standard. They're investing in Oregon, and they're producing in Oregon, and we'll be buying their product as we are now. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll see if there's any few quick questions.
Of course, I have a quick one. I always have a quick question. My concern is the fact that we lose oversight when we lose our sunsets. We've done this before. We do it with water. We always talk about, well, we need to report, and before we ever get to the end of the sunset, we kind of squeeze those reports in, and we want to get rid of the sunset. I think it's important that we, the body, have these sunsets so that we can do what we're supposed to do, and that's oversight. Would you agree with that, or do you disagree with that?
Mr.
I was going to say, wait, you're asking
easy.
Three big businesses right up here. I'm sure
as
they love
representing
oversight.
An industry whose fuel costs can sometimes exceed 50% of our total costs, we believe that the sunset offers us some protection until we actually know what this program is all about. So in the name of the fuel users, I would ask you to keep the sunset in place.
Follow-up.
Yeah. Then how can the other side argues the fact that the sunset gives them certainty? They need certainty, and the sunset gives you certainty, and it takes it away from them. How can that be at the same time?
Chair Dinkfelder, Senator Olson, I believe what you find in the sunset is these individual businesses are already investing, and they're doing it, and it's on their website. If you look at ZCAN's website, they're doing it because the federal RFS creates the mandate for their product. Oregon also has the renewable fuel system here. They're investing here. I haven't heard somebody that said they're waiting on this in order to invest. Pacific Ethanol and ZCAM are working through it with a great federal program that's going to keep them in business. I don't see why this troubled program should go forward.
I think that was the intent of the sunset, was so that you, this is such a big issue, that you would actually see the rules. You'd see the program before it went into effect. I do rules more than legislative stuff. And when a rule goes into place, here's how you have to change the rule for you. You have to pass a law through both houses and then have it signed by the governor. That's the only way you can change a rule.
And, Senator, we have not had this legislature vote for or against an LCFS, nor see an LCFS implementation rule before it yet.
Any other questions?
Senator Bates. Just a quick one about truckers, if I could, for a minute. Mm-hmm. In Medford, they've converted all the public buses to natural gas. Is there some reason truckers haven't embraced this too? What's the problem? It seems like it's the right thing to do.
Madam Chair,
I don't see
Senator
much of
Bates,
it going on.
One of the things that we're talking about here is sort of moving money around from one pocket to the other. We are looking at converting heavy trucks to natural gas. And we believe that that is going to be the bridge to the future. But right now, a heavy truck engine that burns natural gas has a premium cost of $40,000. A natural gas fueling station is multi-million dollars. We also have to retool our maintenance facilities because you can't have sparks around natural gas. And there's a considerable expense to that. So we're hearing that the fuel costs less and the vehicles cost more. That's also true with electric cars and some of the other things that we're talking about. So you might be able to reduce the cost of the fuel, but you've increased the expense through the increased cost of the vehicle.
In other words, locally it might work, but you're thinking long haul, it's a real problem. It
Madam
works fine
Chair,
for the
Senator
buses because they got a fueling station right there.
I believe that someday that we will use liquefied natural gas for long-haul trucking. Goal...
We're going to have to wrap up, gentlemen, because I've got some people that aren't able to come back, and I know you can. So thank you very much for your testimony. So we're going to call up. I'm looking at the folks who I know can't come back. Gary Neal from the Port of Morrow. Gary, thank you for coming. We have Darren Engel. Am I getting that right? Yes. And Blake Rowe. And then also I'm going to call up, we'll put up another chair just because we want to make sure we have Spencer Richley. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Why don't you go ahead and get started? Thank you and apologize that you had to wait, but I want to make sure you get you up here and don't have to come back on Wednesday.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. My name is Gary Neal. I'm the manager of the Port of Morrow, located in Senator Hansel's district, and thank him for being a great partner where he is. It's all about the jobs and the capital investment for us. You know, the Port of Morrow has two facilities located at the port, which have been mentioned previously. Pacific Ethanol has been a great partner in their ethanol production facilities. They rail in corn from the Midwest. They buy corn from the local markets. They produce distillers wet grain for the cattle industry in our region. They take advantage of barge transportation to move their product down the river, which is a very environmentally friendly way to move commodities as well. Hundreds of millions of dollars of annual revenue out of those operations. We have Zeochem facilities, a test facility there. They're in the middle of doing some additional prove out on their technology, which is cellulosic ethanol production, with the hopes that that will lead to a large commercial operation in the not too distant future. So we're hopeful that we'll see over $500 million of capital investment at the port within the next short time frame, and lots of jobs and lots of capital investment, and good for the environment, good for our region, and the other folks that indicated about whether it's Pacific Ag Resources are a good partner as well in our region. But with that, that's what we support our partners in this effort, which are the ethanol and cellulosic ethanol producers.
Thank you. Thank you for being here today. Thanks. Mr. Engel?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. My name is Darren Engel. I am the marketing director, director of marketing for Blue Star Gas. And Blue Star is a family-owned operation. It's led by its third generation of management. We have six offices in Oregon. We've been successfully delivering propane and providing jobs and paying taxes in Oregon for over three decades. I reside in Grants Pass, Oregon, and I have worked in the transportation fuel sector for over 25 years. I currently serve as the national chairman of the Propane Education Research Council's Research and Technology Development Committee. One of our charges is to develop new technologies in the autogas sector. Deciding to support SB 488 for us was a careful consideration, but it was an easy choice. In the past, our country has done a pretty good job and mainly relied on fuel-specific mandates and incentives. And from that, we have failed to deliver on the economic, environmental, and national security risks that the consequences of dependency on foreign oil. We believe that the Clean Fuel Program will rectify this because it's designed to reduce dependence by encouraging all alternative fuels, not just one. What we have not done very well is look around the world to see what is currently working. Worldwide, there are 18 million vehicles that run on propane autogas. It's the number one used alternative fuel in the world. 97% of the propane that we use here in this country is developed right here in the United States. To resolve any concern about the availability and abundance of the supply, we are now a net exporter of propane, mainly to overseas to Europe, where they use it as autogas to run on their vehicles. It's funny, and it doesn't make sense to me, that we are exporting a clean, domestically produced fuel and importing one that is dirty and foreign oil-based. I was surprised to hear that the clean fuel programs will result in higher fuel costs, when in fact many of the alternative fuels are at a much lesser point and price point than gasoline or diesel. For example, over the last 5 years, propane autogas has averaged over $2.75 less than gasoline and is currently hovering in excess of $2 per gallon. So we do support the passage of SB 488 because it will lift the sunset and allow us to manage what we can measure. Without that, we can't even measure what is out there. So it's responsible for us to even manage what we to measure what we can manage.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Rowe? I'm just going by the order I called.
Sorry, that's fine. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Blake Rowe. I'm the CEO of the Oregon Wheat Growers League. Maybe a little different perspective. We do support Senate Bill 488. We think that removing the sunset will help advance the development of the biofuels industry. Presents potential for potentially both for the use of wheat in production of biofuels and also the continued development of the canola industry in Oregon. Canola has turned out to be a very attractive rotation crop for wheat growers, particularly in eastern Oregon. It's a very nice product from a financial return standpoint, provides some positives for dealing with pests and diseases, and has some benefits in no-till agriculture systems. We would like to see the development of a more development of an industry that can use canola for biofuels production, and we hope you'll join us in passing SB 488.
Thank you, Mr. Richley.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Spencer Richley. I'm the policy and regulatory associate at Clean Energy, and Clean Energy is North America's leading provider of natural gas. We currently have two stations in Oregon, one in Central Point and one in Stanfield. And those two stations are part of our broader network of stations that run across the U.S., and it's a 150-station network to serve the goods movement sector. So for the first time, they can transport goods across the country on natural gas. And, you know, as mentioned earlier, long-haul trucking is not an economical application for natural gas, but that's what's driving our industry, and that's why we are building this network. We wouldn't be the leading provider of natural gas for vehicle fuel if it was uneconomical. So we very strongly believe in that. Unfortunately, you know, we would love to expand our operations. We'd love to build more stations in Oregon, but we can't make further investment right now until this sunset date is lifted. The Oregon Clean Fuel Program is a great program, and it might even be better than the low carbon fuel standard in California, because it was they took that program and then they tailored it specifically to Oregon by putting such things as this consumer protection clause. If there's a 5% increase in the price of gasoline, then the program can be halted. So there are protection mechanisms in place. Just to give you some numbers, there are 450 natural gas stations in California. There are two in Oregon, and those are our two stations. Clean Energy has had 270 employees in 2009, and now we have almost 1,200, and a lot of that rapid growth and success is attributable to the low-carbon fuel standard. So Oregon has the opportunity to take advantage of this great program, and we hope that you'll support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Just in time for the clock. Any questions for any of these gentlemen? Senator Hansel and Senator Olson.
Gary, quick question. I understand. I think I got invited to a groundbreaking for Zeachem coming up. Is that right? Have they made an announcement on their expansion? There was something.
They just made an announcement on their success in doing a test on a commercial operation on their test facility, and so I don't know if they have another milestone set up yet or not, but it's hopefully not too far away.
They handed in some testimony. Hopefully you got that, but they couldn't be here today to testify, so there you go. Make sure you get that. Senator Olson,
yes.
Did you have a question?
Mr. Neal, is Zeachem up to full production right now?
In their test facility, they are doing their production for their full production on their test facility, which is 250,000 gallons of production a year.
And they will meet that requirement?
It appears that they're in that full ramp-up mode as we speak.
Okay. Yeah. Follow-up? Mr. Engel, we've talked before about natural gas and the appropriateness of it, and I think, was it you that showed me that it cost about $6,000 to modify a car to burn natural gas?
Yeah, Chairman Dingfelder and Senator Olson, absolutely. If you modify an existing vehicle, fleet vehicle, it's about $6,000 to convert it over to propane auto gas, and the payback on that investment is usually less than 24 months for most fleet applications, some as little as 3 months.
So basically, you're looking more at fleet than the regular commercial application?
Absolutely, because of the return on investment in the miles driven.
I'm trying to do this real fast. Mr. Engel, Mr. Richley, you have two in Oregon, and you have 450 natural gas in California. And California, is that supply predominantly for the folks, or is it for commercial fleets?
Chairman Dingfelder, Senator Olson, thank you for the question. It's primarily for fleets, but many of our stations, about half of them, are also public. So the consumers can also use a private fleet station.
Follow up, Mr. Richley. How many cars in California are run on natural gas?
I don't know the exact number, but I can follow up.
Could you follow up with the number also for Oregon?
Yes.
That'd be great. You can get it to Beth, and she'll make sure the committee gets that information.
Thank you. Great. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate you coming here today, especially those of you who came from far away. So it was Jeff Ross and Ralph Poole, right, that couldn't come on up. Was there anybody else who signed up? We have, for and against sheets. Anybody else?
Matt
yes.
Miller?
Come on up.
All right, thank you.
Are you for or again?
I think I'm with these guys.
Okay. And assuming that everybody else who signed up on the against sheet can come back on Wednesday, I do note a number of familiar names, but I want to make sure that everybody else could come back. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it. Whoever wants to go first, you have 2 minutes each. And
my name is Ralph Poole. I represent a small family business in Ontario, Oregon, petroleum distributor. We've been in business for about 53 years. I find it relatively disappointing that I drive 15 hours to come over here and get 2 minutes to speak, so I just want that on the record.
But you can certainly follow up if you have written testimony. I apologize for that.
I take exception to some of the testimony that was brought on by or put together by the DEQ. Nobody's come to Eastern Oregon to talk to anybody about what the cost might be to implement this particular type of a program. Personally, deliver fuel into into District 60. That district is the most economically challenged, if you will, in the state of Oregon. Our per capita income is the lowest in the state, and our jobless rate is probably the highest. I can tell you that when we get our fuel, we get the majority of it from Idaho, which is produced in Salt Lake. And nobody's talked anything about other than Washington or California and its proximity to the state of Oregon. When that product comes down a pipeline through from Salt Lake into Boise, we pick it up and bring it into eastern Oregon. I've talked to many of the suppliers there. They have absolutely no intent of adding a cellulosic or a Brazilian type of ethanol production into that facility, into those two facilities in Boise. So the gasoline that is put together in Idaho will not be acceptable in the state of Oregon over time. And so what it amounts to is that the cost to the local consumer was going to be to bring the product from Portland. So not only do you add the cost of freight, but you also add the cost of the additional type of fuel, not to mention how many trucks it's going to take to haul that fuel from Portland into eastern Oregon, and how much product of, or how much carbon emission that's going to put into the atmosphere. I mean, it in my mind, it makes absolutely no sense, economic or common sense-wise, for the amount of carbon that's going to put into the air. All that product is now coming in via pipeline, and well, I got lots of testimony I could give you, but obviously my 2 minutes is up.
Well, I hope you will follow up with written testimony so we can have that for the record. Also, appreciate you being here today. Whoever wants to go next?
Sure, I'll go. Madam Chair, committee, my name is Matt Miller. I'm the general manager of Gresham Sanitary, which is a family-owned garbage and recycling company located in Gresham. You know, I hear a lot of things talked about, you know, investment, and here comes investment for this if this, you know, if this continues, this 488. And I'm here to tell you that the investment is already happening. We have spent probably $500,000 in the last year and a half putting in infrastructure for natural gas and purchasing two refuse trucks. I can also say that there's been several other large companies in our industry that have spent, you know, millions of dollars in going in this direction. And so my initial issue with this is that I don't see the need for it. And I see that with this, that this is a disincentive. You know, there's the tax credits, there's the 50 cent per gallon equivalent that I get in a rebate as a small business. That's a huge deal. And I think anything that is a disincentive and penalizes or possibly penalizes a small business or any citizen is a negative thing. I also am not very comfortable with, like some of the other lobbyists have discussed, that giving DEQ basically a free pass to kind of implement the program that they want to implement. I want to see what else they have and what, you know, what are the details of that before moving forward. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for your testimony.
Sir? Hi. I'm Jeff Rouse with Carson Oil Company. And I guess I'm kind of perplexed because I sit in here and I listen to all these very probably expensive lobbyists and, you know, and all these attorneys and people that are telling us, you know, what's good for us, for our industry. And I sit back here and I wonder, I said, these guys, obviously, they don't know anything about our industry because the things that are being proposed and talked about, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This does not happen. The way this strategy is being laid out is the farthest thing from reality. And I would just like to say that our company, you know, we were founded in Oregon in the early 30s. We've been in this state doing business for years. We use roughly 11 to 12 million gallons of biodiesel, pure biodiesel a year through our distribution. We handle over 150 million gallons of ethanol for various customers in multiple states in the Northwest. We have no issue with what the end result is. What we have an issue is how we get there. And as far as Z-Chem and that kind of technology, I mean, I'll tell you right now, I'll take every gallon they make and sell it. Okay. Certainty's over. We're done. Let's move on now. We don't need anything for them to be successful. We'll do it right now. I got people lined up that would take cellulosic ethanol. There was 20,000 gallons made in the whole country last year, and it was exported.
So there's not an issue as far as creating an incentive for somebody. It's already there. People are lining up. You know, and the reason, as testified earlier, that the number started up here on Soliostic and is down to here to virtually nothing is because there's no product. If there was product, that number would not have came down. The RFS has not changed any other numbers downward except for that one. And it's the reason it's going down is because there's no product. So if all these people are waiting for this investment in for all this stuff to happen from you folks to make this investment, why don't they make it right now? Why don't they commit today that they will make that investment? Because the reason is they can't. The whole country made 20,000 gallons last year. I hope ZKIM does it so that we can all benefit from it. But the notion of the stuff that's going on is just DEQ is running on a policy of hope. Hope is their strategy, and I'm just not comfortable with it, nor are our customers.
Thank you for your testimony. Let me see if there's any questions for any of these gentlemen.
I have one.
Hold on. Senator Bates had his hands up first.
Well, that's okay. The gentleman from Ontario, I'm sorry I didn't catch your name fast enough.
Ralph Poole.
Ralph, okay. Well, first off, thank you for driving all this way and coming over. It's a long ways to come for 2 minutes, and I appreciate that. I apologize. I probably should have brought you up first, and you can have a real shot at us. I have two questions for you, though. One was, is your company distribute more than 250,000 gallons a year?
Yes, sir. 250,000 gallons is 20,000 gallons a month, roughly. And there are very few service stations left in the United States, let alone Oregon, that sell that kind of product. They cannot make it economically. I do sell some of my customers, Unity Oregon, Harper, Oregon, they sell less than that. But all other service stations that are most of the other ones that are in business today sell more than that. So you're talking about major, major economic impact to service station owners, small transport delivery type of businesses.
Follow-up. You know, if as a distributor you'd be required to report on this to the DEQ, or is that something that the manufacturer does?
My understanding is that anybody who imports product out from outside the state is required to do that. I bring everything, or all the product from Eastern Oregon comes from Idaho, which ultimately comes from Salt Lake. So, yes, anybody in Eastern Oregon who brought product in from out of state, which is 99 9/10% of it, would be required by that law to make the reporting requirements, which are immense.
Last question mm-hmm. for him. I'm sorry to kind of pepper you, but you got information I can't give from anybody else. How far west does your operation like yours go? Do you go over as far as Burns, or are you like
I sell into
LeGrand and Baker City, that kind
right.
of thing?
Right. I sell into about 150 miles into the state of Oregon, so Lake County, Grant County, Union County, Baker County, Harney County.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for coming again.
Two very brief questions. Gentlemen, anyone can answer this. So you agree that we really should keep the sunset and watch out very closely for the low-carbon fuel standard. Is that true?
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Sir?
Sure. I'll weigh in on that. Yes. Yeah, I agree. And I also think, at the very least, at least allow me, I think Senator Haas brought up, extend it even further. It's going to take me 10 years before I fully depreciate all my diesel vehicles and at least give me an opportunity to get out of the way of this and convert my whole fleet over to natural gas.
Is it Mr. Rawls?
Yes.
Question I have for you is, you say that you can sell everything you've got now. So really, it's a free market enterprise. If they make it, you can sell it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Fine.
There's no doubt about it.
And thank you very much. And Mr. Poole, because you drove 200 or whatever, however far it was,
it's 400 miles.
You only got 2 minutes. I'm going to ask you a question. Is there anything else you'd like to say? Because I can do that.
Yeah, and we'll ask you, one of the things on sheets, just for folks to know, if you mark off that you've come over 100 miles, you get the free pass and you get to come up here. So we apologize because it was not, whoever signed you up did not let us know you came from Ontario.
Is there anything else you'd like to say in conclusion?
Yes. After 50 years of business, I would say that we will sell whatever it takes to make vehicles move up and down the road or in and out of fields. We do not need the legislature to tell the manufacturers of the fuel, the manufacturers of the vehicles, how that needs to happen. If in fact Electricity is the way to go. We'll figure out a way to put electricity out on every farm so that we can make sure that we make them happy. If it turns out that it's natural gas, we'll invest in it. However, those things take time. They take money. A $3 million investment is nothing when it comes to putting in a fueling station. And there's not going to be a tremendous amount of $3 million investments happening in Eastern Oregon. I can guarantee you that. And those trucks, yeah, granted, they do come up with better emissions on that. But in the meantime, what you're doing is you are hamstringing those of us who are trying to supply fuel to people in Eastern Oregon or around the state, and you're going to put, actually, you know, if we have to move product from Portland because it's not available in Idaho, we are going to add tremendous amount of carbon into the air. I mean, even if those trucks are selling or are using 50% biodiesel, you're still putting carbon into the air. It doesn't make sense. It's the same way as ethanol. Everybody thought that was going to be God's greatest gift to the world for carbon standards, but the fuel that is taken to create it is more than the energy that's brought out of it, plus all of the emissions that are going into the air. So I fail to see how a government agency can tell the marketplace how to put that product into the hands of the end user most economically and create the best dynamics between the environment and those users.
Thank you very much,
thank
gentlemen,
you,
for sharing your views today, and thank you for coming all the way over here.
Okay.
We have a couple more people who said they could not come back on Wednesday. We want to have Willamette Valley Medical Transport come up. And also we have Sequential Pacific Diesel, I guess it came from Eugene. Is that right? Anybody else who came from far away, let's say more than 50 miles, that's not able to come back here on Wednesday? We have a lot of in-the-building lobbyists, but if not, please come up right now, and we'll get you on this last panel. It's okay. We'll go quickly. Okay, gentlemen.
Hi, I'm Tim McQueen.
You get the last word today.
I'm the owner of a small business here in Salem, Oregon. I own Willamette Valley.
And can you state your name again?
I'm Tim McQueen.
Great. Thank you, Tim.
I'm supposed to address you as Madam Chairman Dingfelder. Apologize.
It's a mouthful. It's okay.
Yeah. Own a small business. Have in support of this, I just wanted to at least say what has happened to my business and how propane has been an alternative fuel that I have used. Started this business 10 years ago. I built the business from one van to about 18 or 19 that we generally run. But we transport those who are disabled and who are seniors and have specialized equipment for them. We've converted over to propane, which is an alternative fuel that we've been able to put right on our property. We've reduced the amount of gasoline, displaced it with propane, just over 6 months. It's only been 6 months since we've been doing this. And we reduced it by about 180 gallons a month, approximately. So it's in support of trying to lower the carbon that we put into the air. And just wanted to say how much we've saved on the greenhouse gas replacing it with propane, which is much cleaner.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Thank
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Gavin Carpenter. I'm Director of Sales with Sequential Pacific Biodiesel. I will speak fast. We have Oregon's largest and longest running biodiesel facility about 5 miles from here. This year we're going to produce about 6 million gallons of biodiesel from used cooking oil. We collect from 7,000 restaurants in the Northwest, Burgerville, New Seasons, Jail Winfield, Kettle Foods. All that oil goes to our plant. We make biodiesel out of it. In 2009, the Oregon legislature passed the renewable fuel standard. At that time, we had 12 employees. Our tanks were full. We were on the verge of a pretty financial situation. I was offering product at the time about 50 cents below petroleum diesel, just trying to keep the plant open. And the reason is that we weren't able to move the product because of the fuel infrastructure. We couldn't get into terminals or the majors, which is where you mix it with petroleum diesel and sell it to fleets. So we couldn't get access to market. You guys took a leap of faith, basically, put together a renewable fuel standard. That created a 5% demand of biodiesel. They didn't have to buy it from us, but it created that demand. Simply created that demand, gave access to the market. Got us to where we are today. As I mentioned, we're going to produce 6 million gallons of biodiesel this year. We've got 88 employees. All of them receive family wage jobs, all of them receive full health care benefits. So it's a direct significant investment in well-crafted policy. The concerns we're hearing about the RFS are identical to what we heard, or we're hearing about the Clean Fuels Program. Not enough supply, prices are going to go up, supply is constrained. They proved out not to be true with the RFS. We feel that's going to be the same with Oregon's Clean Fuels Program. Our biodiesel last year sold for about 20 cents below petroleum diesel, ethanol selling below gasoline. Right now, there's 9 pumps in Oregon that offer 100% Oregon-made biodiesel. It's selling for $3.99 a gallon, which is about 10 cents below petroleum diesel. We've got a very flat price as well. So the short version is we can compete. We're asking you to remove the sunset on the Clean Fuels Program. We're asking for you to believe in the Oregon clean fuels industry. Give us a chance to show what we can do, show what we've already done. And we'd like to the opportunity to continue to move product forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Let's see if there's any quick questions before we let you go. All right. Thank you very much. And just before I close the hearing, I will make an announcement again that we're going to carry over the public hearing till Wednesday. We will have that first up, and then we'll hear some other bills. And Beth, anything else? With that, we close the public hearing on Senate Bill 488, and we are adjourned.